Welcome to the School of Sales podcast. I am so excited to have Miss Chris Plackey here. I had the honor of working with Chris for a 12-week program, and it was specifically on leadership for women with seven-figure businesses. And I had never been in a room with women only who had seven-figure businesses. And it was so encouraging for so many reasons, which we're going to talk about, but really that we're all kind of dealing with very similar problems, which is just very encouraging to me to know that. Mm-hmm. And working with Chris was so enlightening because I really got to see the power of sticking with something for decades. It was very clear that you had depth of knowledge and experience in the way you coached mm-hmm. people. And that like nothing shook you, nothing surprised you. No matter what someone said, you had heard it not only once, but probably tens of hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And it really inspired me to just to like, I always have had an all-in mentality, but to even lock in even more of being like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to be 60 years old doing this mm-hmm. so that I can have the command that someone like Chris has.
Mm. That was so good. I have to tell you, like, thank you. I loved what you just said. I have never thought about my body of work in the way that you just said it. And that was, first of all, just lovely. And also accurate.
Very accurate. Yes.
Yeah.
And, I've listened to your podcast.
But I'm not 60. Can we just
Well, I know. Out? Oh, I know you're not 60. I'm just saying when I'm like 60, 70, I'm going to be a grandma with gray hair telling people how to sell. And you're going to be a grandma. Telling mm-hmm. people that leadership is feminine. But I'm really excited to talk about, first of all, specifically feminine leadership. Mm-hmm. And actually, let's just back up, Chris. I want to hear it. Like, I just kind of told everyone that you have like a extensive experience and body of work. Maybe you can mm-hmm. just kind of prove that with some specific, your specific kind of track record in a quick format so that people have context.
Absolutely. So, thank you. First of all, it's lovely to be here. So my history actually, it was in sales. I think you probably mm-hmm. know that, but yep. I graduated with the very hireable degree of a bachelor's in recreation.
Oh, okay.
And then I got a job in sales and I worked in a sales environment that was, I always just say old dog sales, just Xerox copier kind of sales, right? And I realized within the first short, well, actually the first week of training, that I didn't belong there. I immediately started to doubt my capacity and my skill because the energy that I had to possess, according to all the people that I worked with at the time, was that I had to be bullish and, you know what I mean when I say old dog sales,
oh,
right?
Know.
Just like, yeah.
Intense.
So I tried to quit several times. And I worked for all men, obviously. This was in the early 90s. And they wouldn't let me. They were like, no, we believe in you. And then something happened very kind of spontaneously. I had an incredible mentor, Bill Brebaugh, shout out to him. And he said to me, nobody quits before they, nobody quit. Nobody fails. Everybody just quits before they succeed. And there was just something about him saying that was so like, oh, well, I don't want to quit before I succeed. I got very upset about that. Like, well, yeah, no, if I'm going to quit, I'll quit as a winner. Mm. Right? So I had a little bit of, I've always had my own fire. I just wasn't ignited by killer instinct, which is what they tried to teach. And as soon as I realized that, and I realized I was ignited through curiosity, mm. getting to know people, asking good questions, helping them, right? I just started to win and I started to be top performer. Then I got promoted. I was top manager. Then I got promoted. I was top director. Then I got promoted and I taught all the directors and managers how to be effective in what they did. And there was so much irony in that, honestly, because it was such a failure when I first started. So my history has always been fail first until you win. And winning is defined by us. Right? My win is different than your win. And that's all good. But it wasn't really until I started to understand, especially as in my leadership roles, because even in leadership roles, people that I was working with as leaders were old dog sales leaders. And they had a belief that you just pound people into getting results. And I'm like, it doesn't work. I mean, sure, fear's a great tactic. It's not sustainable. Why do we
Right.
think car dealerships are constantly like the guy you bought your car from 4 months ago is not there anymore, right? Furniture sale, like all this old school. I don't understand it. Anyway, so I just proved relationships, communication, coaching, listening worked better and was more sustainable. And then when I had the opportunity to start my own business, I knew I already had a body of work when I did that. And I just then started to offer what I did to all sorts of other companies. And I've been doing that now for 12 years. And it works. And what I really came to realize is what we've taught in, sort of corporate leadership environments is that there's hard skills and there's soft skills. And we've sort of been very dismissive of the soft skills. But I actually don't believe there's any such thing really as business skill. I think there's finance skill, accounting skill, sales skill, marketing skill. But if you want to be a good leader, you have to be a good human behaviorist. And that's how you maximize people and their results. And that's how you create soul in your team. And that and soul, like a common collective experience that people want to share together, is what delivers sustainable results. But too many leaders, even today, are focusing on making money. What's the product I need to offer? What's the page I need to put on the planet? What's the funnel I need to follow? What's the this, right? Like we were kind of talking about that before we started recording, and not like, who do I need to become to attract these magicians into my world who will deliver my dream? Because once you get to $1 million a year in revenue, you can't do it all anymore. And that's where so many people find me, because they're like, wait, nobody's doing it right. Why isn't anybody doing it right? I'm like, yeah, it's because you've just been tactician, doer, forcer, getting it done. And listen, we can do that. And I've even seen people do that to, 3 million.
Yeah, that checks out for me too, for sure.
Yeah. And the wheels, do they start to skid off a little, right? And then we have to understand more than just what we want. We have to understand what they want. And as soon as we get that figured out, whoo.
Man. Well, you know, it's I'm reading. Have you read 10X is easier than 2X?
Yes.
Okay, so they talk about how 80% of your results come from 20% of your actions. And
Yes.
when you read that, you're like, oh, that makes so much sense. And
And
they're
your
like,
people.
well, what's interesting is they're like, focus on the 20, focus on the 20, focus on the 20. And then they're like, with the 80, build a team so that's their 20. And you read that, you're like, oh, yeah, of course, that makes so much sense. And when you've been in it, you're like, that is way harder and way more complex than just build a team that can handle your 80 and it's their 20.
Yes.
And that's
Absolutely.
really what has to
Such a
happen,
good
though.
point. Yeah. Yes.
It's just like a one little sentence in the book. It's like, just hire a team. I'm like, yeah, I know. And like, they need teams and they need help and they need it. It can be so complex, but I can also see how, like, when you've got that locked in, and I love what you just said is become a human behaviorist, which I'm going to ask you more questions about that in just a second. It becomes this like one fluid, like, message that you can share with your team over and over again. That helps them move fluidly as one. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think that if you think about families, if you think about any sort of ecosystem, right? Not even human ecosystems, they all have a role. Everything that's in that ecosystem has a role in it to make sure that whatever the result is that that ecosystem is on the planet to achieve is achieved. But what happens in companies, especially founder-led ones, is founders assume people just know all of it because it's like in your brain, it's so obvious. So
Right.
they hire quote that I love that you said that's just a sentence in a book
It's just
because
so
that's my
casual.
it's my source of frustration. It would
Right.
be like you just need to make more money.
It's like, yes, and.
Right? There's so much in there.
Right.
So when the better we get at recognizing that I have to get clear about the ecosystem I'm trying to build so that I can invite the right people in who can deliver on that long-term goal. But we tend to be like, I just need help.
And people do that because they're hurting so bad.
Of course they are. It's so hard
There's
being
so
on
many fires they're trying to put out.
all the time.
And you can't think clearly and consciously when you're in so much pain.
And you're like yours is a great example, right? We have an expertise, which is what got us started, right? We're all practitioners in our own way, but we can't be generalists in this way with all of the factors of your business. You have to be able to lead those elements. You can't understand and know how to do them all. But a lot of entrepreneurs think they need to know how to do it all. And then they put themselves in a corner because they don't know how to hire someone else in who can do it, but they just do it differently.
It's like you need to know enough to be dangerous, but not experts. You can't be an expert in everything. I want to talk about just being a female leader specifically. So what I think is so interesting, Chris, okay, so you just talked about how you led with curiosity and questioning and coaching, which is a sales girl, by the way. You're a sales girl, Chris. Did you know that? But what I've learned so much from
Kinda.
you, huh?
I
What'd you say?
said kinda.
Yeah, that's what sales girls are. We like lock arms with our prospects and guide them over into a decision. But what I've learned from you about leadership as a woman is that you of course, like those are the characteristics I think women naturally have. Would you agree with that?
Most.
Most women, potentially, like we're a little more nurturing and a little more warm and curious. But what you've really taught me is you can have that and stick to your standards and lead with like a subtle intensity.
Yeah, clarity.
Yeah. And so I would really love you to talk a little bit about that. I noticed in our mastermind when or the group of women, they would say things like, I don't want people to like be mad at me or feel bad. And you would consistently remind people of like, hey, this is your business. You pay them for certain results, and it is absolutely okay to hold a standard. And I'm telling you, the way that that has been way harder for me than I expected. Has been a, was a very interesting realization about myself when working with you.
Well, I think that I have a long history of working with women. When I was in a leadership role in sales, most of the employees were women, not all, but it was a field that attracted women. And it started with me when I was relatively young. I was in my late 20s. And we would have a lot of younger 20-year-old women. I watched them make really dumb decisions with their money, with their lives, and with their time. And,
Can you give a specific example?
oh heavens, one girl I'll never forget. Like she was just madly in love with this guy. And she was so delighted. She came to work one day and she's like, I am so excited. He bought me a house. I'm like, he bought you a house? Like, is your name on the mortgage? No. It's in his name and I have to pay him rent, but he bought me a house. I'm like, no, mama. He made you a tenant that gets kicked out. And it did happen, right? So this desire that makes us just as you said, like, we can argue whether I'm not a scientist. We could argue whether it's nurture or nature, but women in general are raised to accommodate, be empathetic to be the soft landing in a partnership, in a relationship, and in a family. And so what I noticed as I kept coaching and grooming and developing and mentoring young women into leadership is that in order for them to survive in an environment that relied primarily on hard skill, lack of empathy, lack of all that, they had to contort and manipulate themselves into people they didn't even like. And I knew that wasn't necessary. That I knew, and I did have a role model. So I give her all so much of that credit, Diane, who is just, she taught me that I can be gracious and kind and engaged. And also, yesterday, you agreed to have that on my desk at 9. Where is it? And it's not personal. I believe that structure, standards, has nothing to do with being a woman or a man. It has to do with respect. And if I don't hold a standard I've set, I'm being disrespectful, right? And I know one of the things that you've probably heard me say a lot, right, is as the CEO founder of a business, you are the custodian of the vision and dream of the business. You are not the caretaker of your employees. Now, that doesn't mean that's licensed to be a jerk or cruel, but it does mean that at the end of the day, if you're going to be people pleasing anyone, let's people please the vision. Let's make sure that what we're doing is delivering on the commitment that we made in our garage or on our laptop 7 years ago when we saw what we could build. These people who come into your life as team members, you didn't sign up to be their boss. You signed up to deliver this vision. And so the standards and the agreements and the invitations we make to those people when they come in, that is your responsibility, your clarity, right? And if they don't want to meet the agreement, that's okay. But they can't stay because that was the agreement we made. Yeah.
That is by far. Like when you listen, you say that, you're like, yes, that makes sense. Yes, that makes sense. Yes, of course. But when you are in the thick of it and you actually have to make decisions based on invitations and standards, I mean, it is by far the most pain I have felt personally as a business owner to date.
Yeah.
To date.
Yeah.
What do
Well,
you
and do you
say?
know why it's painful?
Tell
Let's talk
me.
about why it's so painful, because you're not alone, right? Here's why it's painful. You just wish if they would just insert here, if they would just try a little harder, if they would just focus, if they would just do their damn job, if they would just care a little bit more, if they would just talk to me and ask me for more help, if they would just, I mean, we could, right? And so then what we do is we put ourselves in this position of just wishing they would be different so that I don't have to make the hard decision. And that's why it's hard. But I have yet to have anyone, and this isn't even just in my own business. This is 35 years of experience, right? I have yet to have anyone come back to me after they let someone go, even the hardest one ever, the sister, the mother, the husband, right? Like people have fired the people working with me. They never come back and say, oh, that was a huge mistake. What they always say is, I wish I'd done it sooner.
So when people are in the thick of it with you like that, before they get to the other side and they're saying, I'm so glad that's over, what like specifically are you coaching them on?
Their brain.
Like, how do you help them work through that?
Sure. So, I don't actually think there's any such thing as a problem. I actually got into it with a client yesterday a little bit. She's relatively new. So, like, oh, you don't know me that well yet. Here, hang on a minute. But she has a problem. And I can always tell we're gonna have a good time when it starts with, okay, I have a really complex. Like, okay, tell me what is the problem? And she had all the things. Well, they said this, and then he did this, and then this happened, and then we said this, and now they're saying this, and we didn't do that, and we said this, and we do that, and right? It's just all this like spider web, right? And so What I need your brain to do in that moment is stop using drama in your brain, in your mind, to attempt to make it make sense. And instead, let's just use some math, right? So we're going to get the problem to a sentence. So what's the problem? That's a lot of stuff has happened. A lot of people have said all sorts of things, right? What's the problem? And in this person's particular case, a job that they agreed to do for 2 months has now at the 8th month. That's the problem, right? Now, there's a lot of impact of that problem. They're losing money. They're right there. That's all. There's a lot of impact, but that's really it. That's the fact. And so what I always do is I got to get your brain to what's true. Because leaders have to work in facts. If you work in your opinion all day, we're all going to be a train wreck.
Tell you
Because,
what.
right? That's like asking a 5-year-old to be in charge because the brain, it just wants to feel better, right? It wants to protect you from feeling bad.
Which
So
is
now
why
we
you avoid the hard conversations.
always, yes, of course. But as soon as we can just say, this is the facts, right? But here's what's so interesting. So then in this particular case, she, yeah, buts. And so what I like to do is just watch initially when I start working with clients, I just listen to yeah, buts. I let them go there. I mean, that's the problem, but there's this guy.
Like justifications.
Oh, and squirrels, right? And then, how do we deal? And then what do we do about? I'm like, okay, wait, where are we going? And you hire me to help you solve problems, and yet you've just spent 10 minutes fighting to keep it.
Fighting for it.
Yeah, why? Why does it have to be so complex? I think a lot of people like their problems to be complex because they sound important. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I think it's like if it's really hard to solve, then somehow I have this very difficult thing that I'm not able to solve.
And then
Like
they
if
don't
I'm
have to
like,
do anything.
So we get to a fact. I'm like, well, if the fact is it's taken you 8 months to do a 2-month job, at the end of the day, we just have to ask, are you willing to let the job go? Will you quit the job if they don't change the way that they've been delaying the job? Will you fire the client? Oh, I don't, right? And then we're into, so all I'm doing through all of that is watching all the thoughts that this client has that are preventing her from getting a result. And everything in this case, and usually in all of our situations, is we just want, because she said, we just have to figure out how to get to resolution. And I said, okay, so what's resolution? Well, if they would just, I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
It can't be a them thing. It has to be a you thing, right?
What are you resolved to do? And once you know, now we just execute. And we stop with the drama and we just follow math. If it's taken 8 months, it was supposed to take 2. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you 30 more days. And if it doesn't finish, I'm charging you this much money per month for every month it continues. It's so simple. And yet,
100%.
when we're in it, and so I think problems are just a lie. When we phrase things as I have a problem, we're just lying. Sort of to say, we're really, it's really code for I'm just dealing with something I don't know, I don't either want to deal with or I don't know how to deal with, and I don't have the experience dealing with. It's not a problem because somebody else swoops in. It's like, I have a client who's an ENT. She just removed a bamboo shaft from somebody's throat on Saturday, right? That if I was in the hospital, I'd be like, oh my God, we have a problem.
That's a problem, big
Right?
time.
She's like, no, get that guy on the table. Let's take care of it. Problems are just stories.
That's a really good tangible thing for everyone listening is when you, because my brain literally goes life or death, like almost instantly. And to just sit down and just say, if there were a single sentence that I could describe this in, that is such a good tip right there to
What are
almost
the
coach
facts?
yourself.
What are the facts? Not the drama. Just this is what's happened. This is where I am. This is what he said. This is what I did. Right? What are the facts? Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so good. Chris, I wanted to kind of talk about when to hire. That is one of the biggest questions I get from my people, my clients, and my first thing is like, that's not my expertise. Like, I can't tell you that I'm going to give you the right answer, but here's what I do know about it. And it feels so daunting and so scary. And I remember one of the things that I learned from you is, I think you said once you hit six figures, you at least need a personal assistant. Like, that has got to be the first thing that you hire, which I still don't have, Chris. I don't be disappointed in me. I would love to have one. But I will tell you, the first time I hired somebody was actually my no turning back moment, because I knew that if I was going to be responsible for someone else, like, no turning back. And the way it made me sick to my actual stomach for months and months before I committed. So I get the nervousness about it. But I would love for you just to talk through someone who like has the sales, they feel overwhelmed, but the thought of even giving directions to somebody feels daunting and exhausting. And now they're responsible for someone else. What would you tell them to either know when to hire and how to feel excited about it?
Well,
I know I just opened a
I don't
can
know
of
if you ever feel
worms.
excited about it. Okay, so first of all, yes, getting someone to understand your brain and give direction is a visionary entrepreneur's nightmare.
Literal nightmare.
Literal nightmare. And I'm 54 years old and it's still my nightmare. When I know I have to like get it out of here and into you, I especially for execution,
Yes.
I sort of I do lose the plot a little
Yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
But so I say that only because I teach this for a living
Yeah.
and
And
I
it's hard.
still have to go through my process. So the idea of like, how do I get excited about it is maybe hard, y'all. And you don't have to feel excited to be successful hiring.
That's
You
good.
have to be determined to achieve the vision. Right?
Yes.
To build a $1 million team. That has got to be the focus. And I have one other thing I just want to say, because I love the way that you introduced that, because it made me realize that we have these beliefs about hiring and building a team that I believe limit us. And then I promise I'll answer the question. The second
Yeah.
thing is, I don't ever believe I'm responsible for someone else. And I understand why you say that. And I understand the gravitas of making an agreement with someone and saying, I will hire you. But I do not believe I hire people. I don't believe I hire anyone for good. And they
Like
don't work for
forever? Is that what you
me.
mean?
Yeah. And they don't
Oof.
work for me for good. And I think that's our problem, is we still have an industrial revolution belief system about workers, and that they come in and they get a job in your factory or whatever, and then they get a pension, and then they're supposed to, even though we know people, most people leave every 2 to 3 years, even faster in our younger generation. We still all think that an employer's job is to be a parent, to take care of them, to make sure they have money and benefits and Jeans Friday. I don't freaking know, right? Like that to that's my a paradigm that I wish we could shatter, because it's why, I mean, you're getting me started, bro. That's why we have such an ownership and accountability problem in this country and in the world.
Oh my
People
gosh.
don't accept responsibility for their own results. So if an employee knew, I get to like, it's my analogy I've used with, probably you heard me, with a sports team, right? I'm a huge women's soccer fan, right? I'm very mad at the women's national team right now because of all of the travesties they made with their coaching and all the things. But you know what I know? If you don't deliver on the freaking field, do you know what happens to you?
You don't play.
You don't play, and you may be Alex Morgan and you don't even get your number back. And she's been on that team. She's the oldest player. She and Becky Sauerbrunn just lost their freaking numbers. They're on the team, but they're backups.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And you know what's true? Nobody guesses it. Nobody's like, that club needs to be sued.
Right.
Oh, the coaches get to make a decision based on your performance. And that's what employee-employer relationship should be. Nobody's owed anything. The only thing a leader is responsible for in that dynamic is clarity. Right? I will tell you what's expected of you. I will make sure you have what you need to deliver that. I will provide resources and training if that's my responsibility to do that. I will give you feedback. I will follow up. I will give you compensation that is commensurate with the delivery of what you put into my company, but I do not owe you anything. And so if you hire someone, but I say this to my six-figure clients. Don't be afraid to hire because you're afraid you're going to not make money. You're not going to make money if you don't hire. And you can let people go. For as long as you're afraid of firing people, you are not CEOing your company. You aren't. Right? So now I'll step off my soapbox and I will
Was
tell you.
so good, Chris.
It's a
You're
philosophy.
coaching me right now. I'm getting a nice little
Listen.
coaching session, so
It
thank you.
drives me, but it does. It drives me crazy. I just, with my kids, like, I want all my kids to have their own business. I'm like, do not rely on other people to help you be rich or successful or have ownership. The only thing you need to focus on is what you want to create in the world. And if you go work for an employer for 10 years, get it. I did, but I was an entrepreneur
That's
in
right.
that company and I wrote all my job descriptions. I created jobs for myself.
Wow.
Inside a billion-dollar business. So I don't think if I just waited,
That's right.
I'd still be answering phones and making 90 phone calls.
Wow.
Right?
So good.
I'd be well paid, but I'd be miserable.
That's right.
So when do we hire? Before you're ready.
Yeah.
So two things. If you haven't hired anyone, a personal assistant, a bookkeeper, a graphic designer. These are great people to start with. Get all contracts. Don't hire employees right away. That is a terrible idea. And I actually love Company of One. It's one of my favorite books. It's a book about really about just you and a bunch of contractors, which for me is what I've after. I mean, I've led 250 people teams, so I'm good. Like, I don't need to do that again. And I live in California. So I know my limits and I don't hire employees,
That's right.
but you don't actually have to either. There are tax advantages to having employees. There's lots of great reasons to have employees. So I'm not suggesting everybody shouldn't. I just think you need to know what the difference is. And that could be that you learn that from one of your first hires, which is a great accountant, finance person or bookkeeper. But any one of those roles are great, not because of their contribution, but because most entrepreneurs, that's not their wheelhouse.
Right.
And so you have to learn how to say to a bookkeeper, this is for sure for me, right? I don't know how to do what you do, but here's the result I want from you, right?
Right.
And that's your job as a leader. Is you don't have to understand what they do all day, but you have to understand what you want from the role. Every role has an assignment,
Yeah,
right?
and what I've learned by from you is what result you want by when.
Yes.
That was my biggest thing. I never gave a by when.
Yes. And so if you're managing someone you've not a role you've never done, you don't you may not know, but you know, like you have to know. I always You're right. When we write a job description, the first thing you have to know is what is the key result? So, the key result for a bookkeeper could be the timely, orderly, precise organization of the business's P&L so that when I get to tax time, I know exactly what I'm doing,
That's
right?
right.
It could also be to provide accurate data for forecasting. And budgeting. So, but if I don't know that, then I'm just hiring a bookkeeper. And this is what people do. They hire a bookkeeper and they say, oh, you're my bookkeeper. Here's access to all my things.
That's right.
And then they just send them their numbers every month. And if the entrepreneur even makes it.
I mean, writing, I wrote fresh job descriptions when I was working with you, and it was by far my least enjoyable thing I've done in a long time. Like, I hated every second of it.
Listen, I will tell you, ChatGPT has become my new best friend when
You
it
know, and
comes
I
to my
started
job.
there. I used, and the thing is, I hated it so much, and I still use ChatGPT. So that just tells you.
Yeah, it's
But
I mean, it's awful. It's
what you
awful.
just said, I mean, the thing I will never not think about is like your only job is clarity.
Yeah.
And like what that's what you're saying is like when you hire, get the result you want by when with the if you can give them clarity, like that's your agreement right there. And you have something to lean on to go back to if things get messy.
Yeah. But a
Wow.
lot of people will say, well, I don't know how to do bookkeeping. That's why I hired a bookkeeper. You don't need to know how to do
Right.
bookkeeping. You
Right.
need to know why you
Yeah.
hired a bookkeeper. You need to know
Yeah.
why you hired a graphic designer.
You know, where we kind of messed up with contractors. I have mistaken contractors as also being a consultant and relying on their like consultation advice when really that needs to come from a consultant, not a deal. Like it's two
Yes.
different things. Like a marketing person or an ads person, there's a difference between an executor and a consultant. And that has
100%.
really hurt me.
Yep. Gosh,
Yeah.
that's so good. That's so good. I've done that so many times, especially with digital marketing.
Yeah, it's not the same. And now it's like getting ideas and stuff is awesome, but relying like they need to come up with ideas, that's not their job.
No, and they're not good at it. People who are
Right.
paid tacticians are really good at getting things done,
That's
not
right.
good at coming up with ideas that align with your vision. They're
That's
just not.
right.
And that's not a false, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But it's such a great thing not to hire a tactician for a strategic role.
But when you have so much clarity for like what you expect of them, that's when it can be like, hey, I expect you to come up with new ideas. And they can say, hey, like, that's not what I do. Here's what I do. And just get on the same page right away. Wow. So good. Okay. I want to ask you just one more. There's so many things. I'm trying to hold back because there's just so many things I want to go into. But I just wrote down the word vision because people throw that word around a lot, like the word value. People throw around the word value, they throw around all these words. And I just want to hear you define, like when you're saying help people see the vision that they're trying to achieve, the only thing you're loyal to is the vision of the company. All that, I'm like, wow, so good. The person who's listening to that and is like, okay, but what is the vision for me? What's a cool exercise for them to develop that in a way that pulls the heartstrings of the people on their team?
Yeah, I think that for all of us, it's different. And I love that you're asking because I think there's, the truth about being the leader of a company, just like anything, right? Just like selling, just like marketing, is that there is a framework, there's a blueprint, and we can try 400 different ways to make that sound different, but it's kind of the same, right?
Right.
Where are we going? Who do we need on the team to get there? How will we know if we're getting it done? How will we assess our results? What do we, right? Like those are all very, it doesn't matter what leadership training you do, you're going to get a similar formula. It's the delivery that is the factor that I don't think we spend enough time on. But the vision to me is what's pulling you forward. And you can have what I call your original motivation. I have a client that is now a dear friend of mine. I just saw we went to a lovely dinner at her house when I was in Florida, and her original motivation and why she and her partner started what they started was generational wealth. Right? They came from an environment where they both, average means where they were raised, and they wanted to build generational wealth for their family. And so they sought out mechanisms to do that. And I use that one as an example because I think we all have a different original motivation. I think if I were to tell you what mine was, my first one would be to escape the confines of a corporate, restrictive, compliant-oriented culture that just did not suit me, and also B, to prove the power of one thriving woman, because I then
So
that's the
good.
vision of my business, right? I know that when Macy thrives, an entire ecosystem wins.
Amen.
I know that. I've watched it over and over and over again. We help one woman and we change the freaking planet, right? So that is what I use in my business. I don't use let's escape corporate hell. I use what I know is pulling us forward and what the folks on my team rally to. Like they love that. They love my client. They love her story. They love to talk to her. They love to feed her with social media support. They love to, right? Like they love her, right? My avatar. And then I think if you're my other client who wants to develop generational wealth, sometimes they feel like they don't have that magical, vision, right? And if that's true, I think you have to unpack how your personal vision, what inspires you, has impacted, like, sort of incidentally, the world, right? And in her case, she's in real estate. She's created so many beautiful places for people to live who would never have had that. And with really cool policies, and everybody can have their pet where they, I mean, anyway, it's just stuff. Like, let's just get clear about there's what you want, but then your business now is this entity and it has a spirit and a soul. What's it here for? If we can't say what our business is here to do, I don't know why we have it, right? Like, it can't just be about your own money only because that makes it hard to attract top talent who is interested in that mission, unless it's about them making a ton of money.
That's
And if
right.
that's true, that could be the vision.
Yeah. It's
So,
like, what does the money do for people?
yeah.
Like, what
What
is
is
the, yeah, 100%. It's so good.
Yeah. And now really with our younger sort of generations that are coming into the workforce much more, right? We're Gen Zs, et cetera. That is a group of people that are incredibly mission and purpose driven. And we need to speak into that if we want to attract their brilliant innovation.
Yeah. So good. Wow. Chris, this was so helpful. I mean, I mean, this something I will be thinking through a lot is this like parent mentality. I 100% think I fall into that category. And almost feeling obligate, like it's an obligation because I love them so freaking much. Like my team, like I'm about to get teary-eyed right now thinking about how much I love them. And when you love something so much, you just want to take care of them.
And that's okay. It's so great to love them. It's so want like to feel that is so wonderful. And it doesn't mean that you won't continue to create programs and offers and things to support them internally. It just means be careful that we don't make a family.
Yeah, it's a team, not a
It's
family.
a team, not a family. And a family, someone's always living in the basement and not contributing, right? And it's delicate. And I think it's one of the reasons why a lot of women think they can't bring that element of who they are to what they do because they think it makes them weak. But I think you can be loving and gracious and kind and supportive and build people up and do all the things that I know that are important to you, and also make it very clear, like, this is how we roll here.
Yeah, so
Right?
good.
I don't think it's an either or proposition.
Yes, so good, Chris. Thank you for sharing. I have a couple of fun little questions to ask you to close
Let's
up.
tell me.
What is the book you have gifted to people the most?
Gift of the Sea by
Gift of the Sea?
Anne Lindbergh.
Why?
I think I have it sitting here in my, yeah, it's right up there. It's a Anne, I think her name's Anne Lindbergh. She was a descendant of granddaughter or something of Lindbergh, the blimp thing, right? Hinden? Oh, now I'm messing that up. Anyway, she wrote it in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
And she is a mother of four or five kids, and she used to go spend 3 weeks by the ocean. And the book is just all about being a woman, raising a family, and her point of view of how to be who you want to be and find yourself and be be more of you and also be the mother, wife, etc.
You
don't
know,
know.
I'm all about that. That's I'm going to be getting that book.
Yeah, I've always loved, I just love the book. I've read it several times. I just gave it to all my Hawaii retreat participants. I just, it's not very big. It's a beautiful hardbound. It's not, it's just a nice little book.
Awesome. Okay. What purchase of $100 or less has impacted your life the most that you've bought in the past year?
Oh, that is such a good question. I'm just looking in my office. I'm like, what has that been? $100 or less? Okay, this is dumb, but I actually have a really good answer. My phone case.
Okay.
Kind of a mess right now because it's sitting here. It's right here.
Oh, it looks helpful.
I hate a purse. I hate a purse.
Okay.
See, I'm one of those people, I make lots of money. I don't spend money on purses. I hate the purses. I hate them because they become luggage.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I do. They get, it doesn't even matter how small they are. So I don't carry a purse anymore. I carry my phone and it has my wallet and
efficient.
That's what I have. And
I
it
love
was,
it.
It was $22 on Amazon.
I love it. Okay. Last question. What activity do you do that makes you like feel the most relieved and at peace after a really productive day of work?
Pickleball.
Okay.
Pickleball is the, listen to me. I'm not very good yet. I'm pretty athletic. So
yeah.
That's, I have good, but I'm not, I'm learning strategy, right?
Okay.
But here's why. You know what is the only thing you have to do when you're on a pickleball court?
What?
Think about where the ball is.
Hmm.
There is no capacity to think about what's for dinner.
Yeah.
What are my kids doing? All my kids don't live at home anymore, right? So like, what, I wonder what they're doing. What do I need to do for work tomorrow? What should I write about? Ideas for work. Like it all just goes away because my copiously creative visionary brain. And I'm just focusing on this stupid little ball with holes in it. And it is a heaven I didn't realize I was missing.
So good. You know, racket sports are one of the best things you can do for your brain too. So that's awesome.
Let's go.
Yep.
I'm in. I don't know that I'll ever be like superstar at it, but I have a damn good time.
I'm so glad, Chris. So good. Chris, thank you for sharing with us. Where can everyone find you to listen to more of your brain?
Okay, let's go. So thevisionary.ceo is my website. It's the best place to go. That is thevisionary.ceo. There's no .com.
Okay.
Just so everybody's clear, thevisionary.ceo. And you can follow me on Instagram at Chris Plackey Coach, and you can listen to my podcast, Leadership is Feminine, on pretty much anywhere you get your podcasts.
Awesome.
You'll find it. So
thank you, Chris. You were so helpful today, and I cannot wait to share you with my people.
Let's go. Nice to be here.